Hello, friends, and welcome to episode number 285 of Bad Flips and Maple Dips. I'm Patrick. He's Justin. Here it is, the 2024 season preview season. It's here. Justin, I'm excited. Are you excited?
I am fired up. Let's do this.
Yeah. Locked and loaded. We got all our prep done. And by we, I mean Justin did 97% of it. Actually, probably a higher percentage than that. But I'm always prepared. I'm always ready to talk about the Toronto Blue Jays. Man, there's still spring training games left to be played, but it's like I'm already looking forward to, like, you know, next weekend when the series starts against Tampa. Are you excited? Are you hyped?
Dude, I'm ready for baseball to be back. I haven't been watching much spring training this year. I'm trying to save myself for the regular season.
Yeah, be ready to be hurt again.
162 yeah. games to watch, and yeah. spring training is tough to watch. I mean, I throw it on in the background while I'm working, but I'm not like, I'll maybe watch like the equivalent of two innings of a nine inning game. Like,
yeah, intently. These games, they, aside from meaning nothing, I don't even know why they bother displaying this, the Grapefruit League standings and the Cactus League standings on the MLB website. I just wanted to look at it just on a flyer to see how the Jays are doing. And actually, people complained a lot about how poor they were at the start of spring
including
training.
Including you.
Including me. They currently have the sixth best record in Grapefruit. So they are 13-13. So after starting, they were what, 2-7 or something ridiculous like that. Yeah, they're fine now. It's because, surprise, when your good players play, you win games. So, of course, congratulations to Baltimore for running away with the Grapefruit League championship. Probably the only championship they'll win this season. Good for them. Good for them. Whatever. Anyway. I'm excited. Let's get into camp news, and Justin, we'll talk about that, and then we'll get right into it. We're going to talk about the everyday or nearly everyday players. We're busting it up into four episodes this year. We're going to do who we project to be the everyday guys, and then our bench, and then we'll do an episode for the rotation, and then we'll do an episode for the bullpen. So without any further ado, Justin, what's the camp news?
Yeah, for sure. Lots of camp news actually to cover before we hop into the season preview stuff. Biggest news out of camp, Patrick, Santiago Espinal traded to the Cincinnati Reds this week. The Blue Jays get 23-year-old right-handed pitcher Chris McIlvaine in return. He was a 243rd overall pick by the Reds in 2022 out of Vanderbilt. And in his first year of pro ball last year, he pitched 96 innings to a 3.75 ERA over single A and high A in the Reds system. Of course, Espinal's been with the team since they acquired him. I think it was back in 2018, if I'm correct, for Steve Pierce, who went on to be the World Series MVP for the Boston Red Sox that year. Espinal came up in 2020 with the Blue Jays and has been with the team in the big leagues for the last four seasons, including 2020. Was an all-star in 2022 as an injury replacement for Jose Altuve. Had a very good first half that year. And then ever since really that peak of the 2022 all-star game has kind of taken a downward trend offensively and defensively over the last season as well. Espinal was given a contract by the Jays through arbitration this year. It's like $2.75 million or something, if I'm remembering correctly.
Yeah.
I was reading articles all week, so I'm trying to keep my numbers straight. And so obviously they had him in their plans, but as we've talked about, and including our last episode, which was literally titled It's Ernie Clement Season, other guys have just outplayed him in camp.
Yep.
The signing of Isaiah Kiner-Falefa and Clement's play have just solidified their roles on the team, and Espinal was unfortunately on the outside looking in and deserves to go somewhere where he can play lots. So
yep, I would imagine the way that it went down was Espinal clearly saw he was outplayed, and if he didn't request a trade, the team, you know, probably went out of their way to
deal
them.
You're probably right. There was probably a conversation. They're like, hey, Santi, like, look, we don't have space for the 26 man. Your options are to go to Buffalo to start the season, or we can try and find you a spot where you get to play and be on a big league team. And I mean, obviously, I think most guys will take the big leagues over Buffalo. No offense to Buffalo. Yeah. It's a great place, but it's AAA ball. It's not
so
the show.
I don't know the Reds system very well. I know Ellie De La Cruz is their star shortstop. So Espinal probably second or third base there. Platooning with somebody, most likely.
Yeah, so the way Fangraphs has them set up, they have Ellie De La Cruz playing shortstop. They have Jaimer Candelario. They signed him in free agency,
right,
playing third base. And then Jonathan India is likely there. Second baseman. So Espinal is going to fill that bench role that he was in with the Blue Jays as the utility infielder. They also have another top prospect, Christian Encarnacion Strand, playing first base, which is why they didn't re-sign Joey Votto after they declined his option. It's a young team. So SB at the age of 29 is almost one of the older players there. They've got only three players on the bat side over 30. So it's a pretty young squad. So Espinal's going to go in as a guy with 3 years of service time, and that's more than almost everybody else on the team, essentially. So
there's only two players that have more service time than him.
Yeah,
Candelario
and
one,
Luke
and
Miley.
The other is former Toronto Blue Jays legend Luke Maley.
Yeah, so it's a young squad. Even on the pitching side, they've got Frankie Montas there now, and then Nick Martinez. Those are the only guys who have more service time than Espinal. So he goes in as one of the veterans on a team for the first time in his career, essentially. No longer around guys like Springer, Gausman, etc. So it'll be a new journey for him. And yeah, we wish him all the best. Obviously, some great plays in the Blue Jay uniform. I remember the barehanded catch he made in the Jays' first game back in Toronto after COVID to end the game, going away from the infield. That was a crazy play. Has delivered some good moments for the Blue Jays, and yeah, we wish him all the best.
All the best, but let's talk a tiny bit about Chris McElvain. He was the 41st ranked Cincinnati Red prospect, according to Fangraphs, last year.
Yeah, I love that he comes from Vanderbilt, good baseball school.
Yep. Something to keep an eye on with him. He had a 45 future value, I think, on Fangraphs. He might still.
35 plus, it says.
He had a 55-60 rank with the slider.
Yep.
Which is really impressive. Command is something that we'll have to watch as he develops, but I would expect that he will start in New Hampshire this year. I don't see.
Yeah, they're
why
Vancouver.
He would go.
It depends on. It's going to depend on the trickle down from the Blue Jays, and we'll talk a bit about Blue Jays injury updates here in a second, but it's going to depend on who the Jays need to take from Buffalo to start with the big leagues, and then that'll push guys from New Hampshire up to Buffalo, and et cetera. So there'll be some early season shifting, as there may be some guys who are, you know, maybe starting the season on the IL, whether it's in the majors or the minors, that will cause other people to be pushed up the depth chart, essentially. So
I expect to see Chris McElvain in AA.
Yeah, I think that would be the aggressive push for him. Was obviously promoted to high A in Cincinnati last season midway through. And the high A numbers weren't as good as the single A numbers. The strikeouts were down, the walks were up, the home runs were up. But he moved to double A. The XFIP numbers not too far apart, 424 versus 42. So, I mean, he's definitely a guy who just is far away from the bigs. Like, the ETA for the Reds prospect report last year showed him as 2026, which is two seasons from now as an ETA to the big leagues, and that's if development comes with those 2 years. He's 23 now, turns 24 in September. Man, it's crazy. I still feel like anyone born after 2000 like should be too young, but I'm just getting old now, I guess. So 90s kids remember. But anyways, it's an interesting guy. I mean, a flyer. We talked about what the Jays could get for Espinal, and it was like, yeah, like either like a fringe top 30 prospect or some sort of flyer. And I'd say this guy is a fringe top 30 prospect, right? Like, he was in that 30 to 40 range, and college pitcher. We like the, I like college. I always like guys who came from, who went to college. They've got a bit of their arm has been built up, essentially. They're not just a high school kid who threw 60 innings of perfect games and just blowing kids away. They actually had to go to college and, you know, like, do some some development and build some muscle. He's not like, he's an 18-year-old kid. He's 23, so he's got a man's body, you know?
I feel like this, I mean, obviously the trade, from an emotional perspective, you feel the weight of it because Santiago Espinal was a big part of this team the last several years. But I like Mikel Vain. Like, I like what he has. And I think if he's the best player they could get for Santiago Espinal, then that's still pretty good.
And hey, this is gonna give guys like Ernie Clement a shot to start the season. So the Jays will see what they have there. Over an extended bench look with him, and we'll see what comes of it. But regardless, the Jays did need a 40-man roster spot, which Espinal moving does free up, because it's likely that Denny Jansen will not be ready for opening day. The Jays were given a 2-week timeline on his broken bone in his right hand. Obviously, a catcher who throws with his right hand needs his right hand. And in order to hold a bat, you need to have strength in your right hand. So Jansen was given a 2-week timeline. That would put him basically like right on opening day. So he likely won't start the season with the team. He'll probably be on the 10-day IL and likely come back for like the third or fourth series, potentially the home opener.
Imagine being Brian Servin, a non-roster invite to camp, a non-roster invitee, and you are now the backup catcher.
That's why you have these non-roster invites, right? You need, especially catchers. There's a lot. You need a lot of catchers in camp, like to catch bullpens, live BPs, whatever it is. So yeah, Servin's going to get a shot to at least play. Because Kirk is not going to start every game, especially at the beginning of a season. If this was July and Jansen got hurt for 2 weeks, then yeah, you could ride Kirk pretty hard for that measured amount of time. But at the beginning of the year, you're not going to do that.
Servin has cooled off considerably since the last time we chatted about him, which I think was last episode.
I don't think we're surprised by that, though.
Yeah, no, it's not a surprise. He still has, his slug is still just a shade under 700 for the spring, which is excellent, but... but the walk and the K rate are identical, 14.8, which is weird. But it's only 27 plate appearances, so don't poop your pants over that. He'll be, pretty much what Luke Maley and Tyler Heineman were in years past. He's just there until Jano comes back, and he'll be serviceable. He won't be the reason we win or lose games.
Unless he makes bad errors, but that's the unlikely to happen.
Can we talk about this one thing that I'm really excited
about?
We're going to
talk about the good news. Bowden Francis is making the team, Patrick.
I love it.
Yep, he pushed his way there.
I'm so happy. He earned it. He's more than earned it. He earned it last year to make this team anyway, but as a starter, it's a big ask.
Yeah,
it's a lot, and we'll talk about that in the preview episode, but Bowden Francis is listed on the depth chart as our fourth pitcher, and that's because Gausman is going to miss his first start.
Most likely,
So
he might come in for the fifth game, like if the Jays determine that he's ready, but yeah, he won't start opening day, that's for sure.
Yep, so good for him. Another thing that... we didn't add into our sheet here to discuss, but the odds sound like they're in favor of Ricky Tiedemann making this team as well. That's what I'm reading.
They're saying he's in the mix. To me, that's just what they're saying. I think there's a 0% chance Ricky Tiedemann makes this team out of camp.
I don't know about that.
It depends. It's going to depend again on other guys like Romano and Swanson. They could end up using Tiedemann out of the bullpen to start the season as like a 2-inning guy or something, but I see him by the end of April being in Buffalo and likely sooner than that, just because I think that's where he'll start, and they want him to be a starting pitcher. So,
well,
yeah, he's not ready to start in the big leagues.
The issue is that Yariel Rodriguez is battling back spasms. Yeah. Jordan Romano has elbow inflammation, and Eric Swanson has forearm soreness. So, with all those guys hurt, there is space on this bullpen, and which means Zach Pop and Mitch White are going to be in the bullpen to start the year.
Mitch White's likely going to be starting the fifth game in place of Gausman, just because of the fact that he's hurt right now. So
that's tough, because it goes four games against the Rays right off the hop.
Yep.
No days off. And then
Houston, right?
Right into Houston, and then they get a day off before they play the Yankees on April the 5th.
And those are all road games, I believe, are they not?
That's April 4th is the only day off the Jays have in the first 2 weeks of the season. Yep. So, and it's tough. It goes Rays, then Astros, then Yankees, then Mariners, and then the Rockies, and then right back to the Yankees.
Yeah, tough schedule to start the year. But I mean,
these first 16 or 17 games are going to be pretty significant as far as difficulty levels.
The good news is, for the Blue Jays at least, no Garrett Cole for those first couple Yankee series at least. So
that's true. But we may not have Jordan Romano or Eric Swanson.
Or Kevin Gausman. Or Danny Jansen.
Kevin Gausman. I think Yariel Rodriguez is starting today, today being March 23rd. So I think it'll be okay. Like, I think he'll be ready to go. It's just he'll be out of the pen most likely to start the year.
Yeah.
So that maybe Zach Pop doesn't make the team.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see. I mean, we talked about it throughout the offseason, how the Blue Jays have better pitching depth than they've had in the last 5 or 6 years, and that's going to be put to the test right away. So
let's talk about the Alek Manoah of it all.
Yeah, so we've got a couple updates here on Manoah and Kevin Gausman. Manoah threw live batting practice to prospects Rafael Antigua, Spencer Horwitz, and Davis Schneider on Friday. Threw 23 pitches over 4 at-bats, had 3 strikeouts, and topped out at 96 miles per hour on his fastball. That's more velo than he had at any of his Grapefruit League appearances. Good to see that. He said he felt good. He was happy to be back out there pitching. Obviously, when you're throwing 23 pitches less than a week before opening day, you're not going to break camp with the team, especially when you're coming off of a absolute dumpster fire of a season. It's likely that Manoah probably just stays at the complex for extended spring training. He'll be on the IL to start the year, most likely. That gives the Jays more time to keep him in Florida, where it's nice and toasty and nice and warm, in the pitching lab, at the complex, and then they can send him to Buffalo for a couple of conditioning starts, maybe even just keep him in the complex league or in Dunedin to start those games down there. Gausman is in much the same boat, unfortunately, Patrick. He threw a sim game on Wednesday, which means he should be able to throw again probably Sunday or Monday. 36 pitches over 2 innings. Went to the dugout between innings to simulate like going up and down. He threw to Espinal, RIP, Kevin Biggio, and Bo Bichette for a total of 7 at-bats, and topped out at 97 miles per hour with a couple of strikeouts. Gave up a couple of hits as well. I think Bo got him on a ground ball. But yeah, Kevin Gausman throwing 97 after having some issues is also good. That's about as hard as he'll throw. So that's great to see. He said he felt good. Jays will see how he goes again probably on Monday, whether it's in a minor league spring training game or they might even pitch him in the Grapefruit League. And he said he was going to try to beat a 75 pitches by opening day. That's going to be difficult considering he just threw 36. I'd probably put a ballpark 50 pitches maybe in his next outing, 55 max. And then he'll likely be a guy who maybe just stays with Manoah in Florida, throws another sim game, and then is maybe ready for the second time through the Jays rotation. So won't be a long-term thing for him. Manoah is another story. But those are the kind of the two updates on those guys.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how like frazzled are you over the current like quantity of injuries?
It's obviously concerning. Yeah, I'd say a 7. It's tough when it's your ace, your closer, and your best setup man, you know, and then your second, your starting catcher, basically, you know, like it's, those are 4 very key guys right there.
Yeah.
And then you throw in Manoah, who is obviously starting pitcher with the potential to rebound and hoping that he does. But you've got, yeah, the you mentioned Yariel Rodriguez, who's still working his way into camp after the back spasms. So there's definitely some issues going through Blue Jays camp. We're just happy that all MRIs have come back with no structural damage. So it's good that these guys they're all working back. Like, it's not like they're just sitting on the sidelines right now, shut down. They're doing things to get back. So nothing long term. And I think I'd rather have these injuries pop up now than during a stretch run in September. So hopefully these guys can get over whatever is ailing them and then be good to go for the rest of the season.
Do you think that with all these injuries, I mean, if you look at the way that it's set up on Fangraphs, which I know, like, whatever, it's Fangraphs, Nate Pearson, Zach Pop, Mitch White all make the team, Yariel Rodriguez rehabbing, Manoah rehabbing, Romano and Swanson. Yeah, it's tough. This is, the bullpen does not look even remotely as good as what we were hoping right off the top.
Yeah, I mean, if
the first week of the season could be really rough for the Jays. It could be really, really difficult.
Other teams are going to have issues too, but yeah, it's definitely not ideal. Right now you look at the Jays depth chart and they actually have Jimmy Garcia as the closer with Nate Pearson and Yanisis Cabrera as the setups.
No.
It'll be Tim Mesa.
Yeah.
Chad Green probably instead of Nate Pearson and Yanisis Cabrera. But then you've got guys like Trevor Richards, Zach Pop, Mitch White all stated in the bullpen. They do have Kevin Gausman still sitting in that fifth starting spot because there is an outside chance he does start that first game against the Astros in the second series. I wouldn't say that that's likely, but it's not impossible.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm
nervous.
It's a little bit nerve-wracking, like you said. Like, it is concerning that these guys aren't ready and up to speed. Like, they're not throwing six innings yet in the terms of Manoah and Gausman. But I mean, the Jays do have the depth, and everybody who would be pitching on this team to start the season does have major league experience. It's like we're just entrusting the season to a bunch of rookies. So they do have projected on the injury list Danny Jansen, Alec Manoah, Yariel Rodriguez, Jordan Romano, and Eric Swanson as projected injury list, and that's likely going to happen. Whether they actually place them on the IL or not remains to be seen. Every guy that they have on this depth chart is on the 40-man roster, so technically the Jays could just, you know, option them to AAA, essentially, if needed. Everyone except for Danny Jansen has options, so Jano is really the likeliest candidate to open up the season on the IL. But we'll see what happens. There's still 5 days left of Grapefruit League and a little bit of time for these guys to get healthy. But we should get into the meat and potatoes of this one, I think.
The main event. We're going to talk about the everyday players for the Toronto Blue Jays. So it's the big boys. I'm very interested in seeing what your take is going to be, what your expectations are for some of these guys.
Yep.
Some of them, I can't make up my mind. I'm very split. So without any more pomp and circumstance, let's just get right into it. Let's talk about Mr. MLB The Show 2024. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Justin, lead us off.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, obviously the biggest question that everyone has been asking over the last two seasons is, will Vladdy get back to his 2021 season? And I mean, you look at the batted ball metrics last season, he still ranks very highly in things like exit velocity, expected batting average. Like last year, his expected batting average was .299. When in reality, he only hit .264. So he definitely underperformed the statistical models. He got better at his chase rate did improve a little bit last year. 2022, it was at the 39th percentile. It was back to the 43rd. And his whiff rate actually got better as well. So he did make some strides there that we've been looking for in terms of just patience at the plate. So that was good to see. I think the biggest concern that we still have about Vladdy is the fact that he's just not hitting as many dingers as he once did. Obviously, a guy who's capable of hitting 50 home runs, 48 in that near MVP season, and then he goes to only hitting, you know, 26 last year after hitting 32 the year before. So that is concerning, but I like that the walk rate came back up and the strikeout rate went down a little bit. So it was good to see some progress last year. And he has said this year that he's going to like look to do more damage. You know, like last year he was trying to hit a lot of line drives. I think Blue Jays were doing that.
Yeah, if there's one thing I never want to hear again, it's that Vladimir Guerrero Jr. wants to focus on line drives. I get it. Yeah. I understand what he was trying to do last year or whatever entity was coaching him to do a certain thing last year, but no.
Yeah.
It did not work. His batting average is about 30 points lower than what I expect it to be.
Yes.
And the slug is about 40 points lower than what I... 40
yeah,
to 60
the slug just needs to be closer to 500. I mean, the fact that he hit 264 last year and his on-base percentage is actually better than 2022 was a good sign just because the walks came back up for him. A little bit less chase will do that. But his fielding also suffered last year. He put a lot of work in this offseason to get into even better shape than he was. Like he's putting a lot of effort since he came into the show. Obviously, we know we had a lot of issues in 2020 with conditioning and whatnot, but he's putting a lot of work. So I'm hoping that this is like Vladdy revenge tour, and he's hit a few absolute piss missiles in spring training so far for not only like home runs, but for also long extra base hits. And he's even had like a single that hit off the top of the wall, but he just hit so hard he couldn't get the second base. So it's just, I think he's back to hitting missiles, and that's what we want to see.
I think the main thing I want to see this year from Vladdy is just an exclusive focus on just driving that ball, not a line drive, but just like get underneath that ball and just put it out of the park.
For sure.
You know what I mean? Like, he's got to get back to that style, that approach at the plate. And I think he's, everything that he has said in spring training indicates like he's aware. There's no way he's not aware.
Yeah, I think everyone's aware of what happened with this team last year, you know? You'd have to be
blind
and or deaf to not hear what was being said and see what was happening. So,
but the thing is, for people to be like, oh, well, Vladdy, this is who he is. He's 25 years old plus 7 days. His birthday was on March the 16th.
And he already has 4 years of service time.
Like, calm down.
Yeah, he's fine.
He's going to be fine. Let's see what 2024 has. And, you know, the rumor and innuendo that's floating around is that both Vladdy and Bo have been in discussions quietly behind the scenes for extensions. So everybody just relax.
If it happens, I hope they announce those on the same day. That'd be cool. But anyway,
I think it would be cool too. And I think they probably would if it does happen. Yeah. But Vladdy is a power hitting first baseman who has the ability to also hit for contact. I'd like to see him loosey goosey at the plate. He's 25 years old and he already has 130 career home runs.
Yep.
That's insane. Okay. Just relax. Let's see what he does this year. My hope is that he hits at least 35.
I was going to say, Fangraphs has him projected at 33. So you're taking the over on that?
Very slightly over on that. I do think that this is going to be the revenge tour. Like, I think he's going to terrorize the AL East. They're not going to get away with anything this year. The Jays had a pitiful record last year against divisional opponents, and with every team except for the Jays improving,
I'd say except for and Boston, I'd put in there too. I think they got worse.
More notably, yeah, I would say Boston got worse. The Jays, you could make the case that they got worse. I'm not really convinced. It's hard to say. I think there was some addition by subtraction, and I think there was also there's a big problem at third base. But Vladdy is not that. That's not the problem. Vladdy needs to do what Vladdy does. And everybody keeps saying, oh, well, is he going to get back to 2021? He may never reach that again, but he's only 25 years old. This young man has at least
look
10 to 15 more years of baseball in him. Yeah. Just let him develop. There aren't that many 25-year-old players who have this much service time. You know, that aren't like, it's not like it's a full shutdown on development. Vladdy will still continue to develop.
He's young. Yeah, he's got lots of time. I mean, this is what I'm hoping for Vladdy. If I don't need Vladdy to hit 50 home runs in a season, I don't need him to be 2021 Vladdy. I need him to be a guy who's good for 30 to 35 home runs, close to 40 doubles, hit for like 285, and have an OPS that's like 850. You know, like that's like all-star territory. Like I don't,
if he's hitting 285, his OPS will be higher than 850, though.
Yeah, and if he hits that many home runs, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. But he needs to get like a 789 OPS last year for a guy who is supposed to be a power hitter is not enough. Like, it's got to be in the 840 to 860 range for him to be like, considered a successful season, I think, which is a pretty significant increase over the last two seasons. But I think he can do it. I think that the approach is going to be there this year. Based on what we've seen in the spring, I think he's kind of ready to just start mashing baseballs again. And I don't need them to be all home runs. I just need them to be missiles. And I'll be very happy.
Here's my prediction for Vladdy. I'm going to say 35 home runs. He'll hit 285 or better. The OBP will be around what it was last year, which will leave him with an OPS somewhere between 830 and 870. That's my prediction.
Yeah, which is fantastic. I can buy into those exact numbers. I won't argue with that.
I think he's your standard issue all-star first baseman.
Yep.
The end.
Yep. End scene. All right. Next up, we have Bo Bichette, Patrick Marsh. Bo Bichette, outside of the injury issues he had towards the end of the season last year, incredible year once again. One of the best hitters that we've seen coming through the Jays organization in a long time. This guy, I mean, as good as Vladdy is still kind of the engine of the offense. When Vladdy is going good, the entire team typically does. But I would say Bo is the most important hitter in a sense that they need him in that top three, because if he's not there, then they're in danger. Like, grievous danger. But yeah. I love Bo Bichette. I think that he, more so than Vladdy, has the chance to like win MVP awards, essentially, just because he does so much more, in the sense that he can, like, he really has like that power to all fields, the great two strike approach. He's just like a really good professional hitter. And when you look at Bo Bichette, I mean, this guy has gotten really better every year in a lot of ways. Like, he's on a .299 career batting average through five seasons, hit .306 last year. The home runs, just like for everybody else, were a little bit down, but he still, you know, was like leading the league in hits. His OPS is at .814, which for a guy who hit 20 home runs it's higher than Vladdy, who hit more home runs than that. Like, he doesn't have the patience. We're not really worried about that. He chases quite a bit, but he doesn't whiff a lot. So it's like, Bo is an aggressive hitter. That's never going to change. But he goes up there looking to do damage every time. He's not the Justin Turner, you know, put the ball in play veteran hitter. Bo Bichette is a do damage kind of guy, and you love to see that. And I think that with a full healthy season, Bo Bichette will get a lot of MVP votes this year. That's my prediction for him.
Yeah, I think I agree. I think the 20 home runs will probably from last year probably represent a career low. I think the 5 stolen bases I'll also probably represent a career low. Or, like, I'm talking about like thinking about the future of him. I think last year was probably the lowest. I think both those numbers will get until his like age 37 or 38 year. He had .306, which was phenomenal. Look at his spray chart.
Yeah,
I don't know how you could ask for anything better. It's beautiful. From a guy. Yeah, it's fantastic. He has power. He does have speed. He didn't really get a chance to take advantage of the changes to the bases last year.
I mean, his sprint speed is only in the 43rd percentile. He's not as fast as people give him credit for.
He's slowing down a little bit, but I think we have yet to see his top potential. And down ballot MVP votes are probably reasonable. The defense is still...
It's fine. He's not winning gold gloves, but he's not losing baseball games there for the Blue Jays, you know?
No.
Like, his first couple of years, there were a lot of, like, really bad mistakes that he was making at shortstop, but he's really improved in a sense, like I just said, that he's not the reason that the Blue Jays lose games anymore.
No.
Out there. So.
Not at all. So, I don't know. Between the two big... The big two that we have, Vladdy and Bo, I think Bo is the more important of the two. But
they need both, but I think I agree with you, yeah.
I think I expect him to hit at least 20 to 30 home runs this year. Probably closer to 30. Probably 30 to 35 doubles. That would be great. I think he's going to hit a lot of singles this year. And I expect, you know, probably between 70 and 90 RBIs is reasonable. And I'd be more than happy if he hit over 300. I'd really like that. I think that's what I see from him. A fully healthy Bo, especially close to the end of the season, is extremely dangerous.
Yeah, yeah. Bo Timber, Septembo, however you want to call it. But, I mean, Fangraphs has him at 24 home runs projection. You're taking the over on that?
Very slightly over, yeah.
I'm gonna take the push. I think that's kind of right where he'll end up. I would say, like, 25 is like kind of where I could see him hitting. But I think, anywhere between 20 and 25 home runs, I'm happy. Especially if the other numbers remain similar with in terms of like the batting average and stuff that you just mentioned. So
a couple things with Bo that are, I mean, this is who he is as a hitter. The chase rate. I'd like to see him become a slightly
more damage.
Yeah, he can do damage though, while also maybe picking a spot. Sometimes
you look at the 10th percentile chase rate, but a 72nd percentile whiff rate. He doesn't swing and miss a ton compared to how much he chases.
But I think those numbers could be even better. And I'm interested to see how Don Mattingly influences Bo this season. I'm very, very interested. I think his walk rate is going to be very interesting this year. I think it's going to be much higher than what it's ever been. But we'll have to wait to see. Only 5 more days. But, yeah, Bo, I think Bo is probably the most valuable player we have among our everyday guys.
Yeah, I agree.
Let's talk about George Springer. This is let me tell you something, okay? I love me some George Springer. My heart breaks that, you know, he had such a miserable April last year. And I
really,
think it takes away from, you know, he did have a good year. He had 21 home runs and 20 stolen bases. The average was probably about 20 points lower than what it would have been if he had had even a decent April. That's how bad it was for him. Like, he had no luck at all. The slug is way down last year, but it was down for the entire team.
Yeah. He actually had more doubles last year than he did the year before. So
Which is not a surprise at all, given the way that the team was coached.
The fact that he was healthy for the full season was huge.
Love it. Yeah, really happy with that.
Games played. Love that. Yeah.
He will absolutely hit better than 258 this year. I would bet folding money on that.
And I will honestly take the 258 as long as there is more power. Like, if he's going to play 154 games this year, he needs to hit more than 21 home runs. It's got to be closer to 30 for that.
Yeah.
But I think like, as a player gets older, we've seen, I mean, Justin Turner had a great year at age 38. So we know that it can still be done. And George Springer is only 34. He'll be, what is his birthday? I think is sometime in like the middle of the season or something like that. But I mean, he still has time. It's not like he's cooked. his birthday's in September, no. So he'll be 35 right towards the end of the season. So it's like he still has time. There's still a couple more years left in this contract after this through 2026. So still have another two seasons of George after this one. So that he's on this team for the long term yet. Still another three seasons. And they've said he's going to hit leadoff. We've seen him hit dingers already this spring. Like he's already said, and there was a, we talked about on the show already, that he wants to get back to doing damage, which is for him pulling the baseball. And I think that a lot of Blue Jays are going to do the same thing this year. They'd be dumb not to because successful power hitters pull the baseball. And I think George Springer has a long track record of being a successful power hitter. And I think he can get back to that again.
Yeah, and I highly doubt he will have as miserable an April as he did last year.
Yeah, you would hope that this entire team gets off to a good start. Last year, Matt Chapman took all of the Michael's special stuff from Space Jam reference, and nobody else got any. So it's hoping.
Also worth pointing out too, George's July was absolutely miserable as well.
Yeah.
So he had two atrociously bad months. It's atrocious for him. I still think he's got what it takes to be a premier outfielder. Certainly not a center fielder anymore, but no. We don't need him to be.
He's third on the center field depth chart right now.
Yep, and that's where he belongs.
Yeah, right field's a good spot for him. He was very solid there all year. Helped him stay healthy. Love to see it.
Yeah, so I'm excited to see what George does. Him leading off is interesting.
I'm still sold on it, honestly. Like,
yeah, well, he's one of the greatest leadoff hitters in the history of baseball.
Sport. Yeah,
go look at all the numbers. The only player that's hit more leadoff home runs than him, I think, at this point is maybe Ian Kinsler and Ricky.
Yep.
That's not bad. He might actually be second behind Ricky now. I don't remember.
But I'm looking it up right now. Let's see. Home runs. Most career home runs in history. George Springer is in second place now, Patrick Marsh.
Yeah, he will.
Ricky Henderson has 81. George Springer has 57. Alfonso Soriano, 53. Craig, 54. Biggio has 53. Mookie Betts is coming. He's at 48. So...
Objects in the mirror closer than they appear. Mookie Betts is probably.
And this was written on October the 1st, so it's Mookie Betts
of last year. Yeah.
Of last year, yeah. So Mookie Betts is still honestly doing things. He had a home run in the Seoul series already. So
a couple of games. I expect under. That nobody, neither one of those guys.
Yeah,
will
81
catch
is
Ricky.
A lot.
That's a lot. And they don't make him like Ricky Henderson. He's one in a million.
Yeah, I agree.
Let's talk about Justin Turner. I guess he's the cleanup hitter for this team. I guess that's what his role is.
A great job doing it in Boston last year, so
a lot of people pooped on signing Justin Turner. I don't really understand.
There was also a lot of poop about the Justin Turner signing, given that JD Martinez just signed a 1-year $12 million deal with the Mets. But the smart people on Twitter, which there are getting increasingly fewer of those, it seems, these days, pointed out that obviously there's a big difference in signing a guy when the Blue Jays signed Turner versus Martinez holding out to when he did, because obviously Martinez wanted more and probably more than just 1 year, but teams aren't willing to give that in this economy, it seems. So
it's worth noting too that JD Martinez will be starting the year in the minors. He will not be with
exactly.
the big club
versus
right off the top.
Justin Turner is going to be contributing on day one for the Blue Jays. So
yeah, so
checkmate.
Yeah, I'll take it. As far as like valuable hitters, Justin Turner is still an 800 OPS hitter.
Potentially, yeah.
He still hits 276 or better. So if he's able to get the power going, in anywhere between 22 and 28 home runs, I'll take that.
Fangraphs has him at 16 home runs. You're taking the over, I take it.
Oh God. Yeah. Way over on that, especially with all the games that the Jays will be playing at Yankee Stadium.
Well, he's a right-handed hitter, so I think
Yeah, it's still a Mickey
Mouse. I think
Mouse.
Fenway will be the better comp there, but.
Yeah, you're right. I mean,
but also
we have to
remember too, Patrick, that the Rogers Center dimensions last year changes led to less power. So maybe they're also taking that into effect that he's going from a home ballpark of Fenway, noted right field power central for hitting fly balls over the monster, to Rogers Center that was. Saw a downtick in home runs. That could be a part of the projections,
yep.
But I'll still take the over on 16.
I'll happily take the over on 16 home runs. Oh my God, yeah. That's easy. I think his OPS will be between 750 and 800. I don't think it tops out any higher than 805. Like he's 39 years old, not 93. He's 39 years old. Father time comes for everybody. This is only, it's only a 1 year deal, right?
Yes, that's exactly why they signed him to a 1 year deal. Yeah.
That's
what he'll get for the rest of his career until he hangs him up. So.
Yeah, he's the new Brandon Belt, basically.
Yeah.
The difference is that he'll be pretty much the everyday DH. He might see a handful of games at third, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
It really depends on who's pitching and who is injured and who's unavailable and who needs a day off.
Yep.
But. I like this signing. If he gives the Jays 96 runs batted in the same way he did last year, this team makes the playoffs. That's a lot. Like,
okay.
That's a huge driving force.
So you're saying the season rides on Justin Turner?
It kind of does.
He's definitely a very important bat, given the fact that he's not going to be expected to play defense very often.
If ever.
Yeah, maybe against lefties, you know, when they want to get as many right-handed bats in the lineup as possible. And maybe they're trying to give, you know, Springer a day off or somebody a day off, you know, because they've been, or maybe that's the deal, then get David Schneider into left field and give Kiermaier or Varsho a day. You know, it's like, yeah, he's going to play nearly every day on offense. But as the DH, he's, like you said, he's this year's Brandon Belt, essentially the right-handed version where you expect him to back up Vladdy occasionally and then just DH most of the time. And if he can be similar levels of production to what Belt was last year, like hit close to 20 home runs and drive in a bunch of runs, the Jays will take every he'll be worth every penny, essentially. And, yeah, I think he's going to – there's a lot of criticism when the signing was made, but – teams do need these like vets. Like, this is a World Series champion, you know, like he's another guy you bring in with a lot of playoff experience from great LA Dodger teams the last decade and a half. And just, he's just been around for such a long time. He's been kind of touted as like a future hitting coach just because of the fact that he's been so consistent his entire career in terms of just what he brings every season. The type of hitter that he is, he's not like he's dead pull for power, but he still can go the other way for like extra bases kind of thing. He's just a good professional baseball hitter, and I think that's why the Jays went out and got him. You need those guys on your team.
Yep. Let's talk about Dalton Varsho. This might be the most difficult conversation that we have for this episode.
Difficult for you. It's Varsho season, baby.
So here's the thing with Dalton Varsho, because we can't just talk about his bat. He is a defense first player. He is quite possibly the best defensive outfielder in baseball today.
Yes.
His offense last year was a significant step below what the Jays were expecting when they first signed him. There is no getting around it. There is no way to sort of hide it. He hit 220 with a 285 OBP and a 389 slug. Good for a 674 OPS, which is not what you want out of your everyday center fielder. I think it's a disappointing season. I understand that Dalton Varsho is not a hitter first player, but he also didn't appear to be a hitter second player. He seemed to be a I do everything well except for being at the plate.
I've never heard that phrase used before, and I love it. That's a good one. But yeah.
I'm only teasing.
No,
if you look at his career numbers, somewhere in the 740, 750 OPS range.
Yeah. And look, I mean,
what you're getting.
He's not an on-base percentage god. He's not going to take a lot of walks. He's not going to hit a lot of, like, he's not going to hit for average ever in his career. But
yeah,
what
but he's got to hit better.
Yes, what the Blue Jays need is something similar to his 2022 season, Patrick. A 235 batting average, 302 on base, 443 slug, a 745 OPS with 27 home runs. That's what he did. And that's why the Jays kind of went out and got him, along with the defense, of course. He still hit 20 home runs last year. It was just the other areas where he needed to improve upon, which is just putting a few more balls in play. I think a lot of the issues with Varsho last year were on high velocity. We saw teams victimize him there. He's made some changes to his batting stance. He's got a bit more of an open stance now, and it has led to great production in spring training so far. 52 plate appearances so far, Patrick. Only the one home run, but he's hitting .333 with a slugging or an OPS of over 900 to start, with a 151 WRC plus. Putting a lot more balls in play. He's been taking more walks and striking out a lot less. Maybe just the simple fact of opening up the stance is going to allow him to get a better view of the baseball, maybe lay off a few more close pitches. And, I mean, I'm not expecting him to take 17% walks in the bigs, but if he can even increase it to close to 10% from the career average of 8.3 that he's had, that'll boost his on-base percentage 15, 20 points, you know? Like, it's...
Yeah.
This guy's capable of stealing 30 bases if he can get on base. Like, he had 16 stolen bases last year with a 285 on base percentage. Like, if this guy can get close to, say, a 340 on base percentage, he could steal close to 30 bags. Like, it's... He's got that type of speed, 70th percentile sprint speed, and of course with the bigger bases, it makes stealing bases easier. But just with that outfielder jump ability, if he can start getting good jumps off of pitchers, there's no reason he can't steal more than 20 bags this year. This is a guy, like, I took him in a fantasy baseball draft because this was like my one homer pick. I always have a homer pick, and I'm betting on the Dalton Varsho like revenge tour this season. Pretty crazy that a guy who had an OPS below 700 still put up 2.2 WAR last year on Fangraphs. Like, if he can get back to what he was in 2022, he's basically a 5 WAR player. So, it's... We talk a lot, like, you've mentioned it a lot, right? Like, it's tough to have a lot of faith in what this team did in the offseason. But it's also tough to bet that all of these guys would be as bad as they were last year. It's like... Regression, yep. Regression to the mean has to happen, and regression to the mean can be a good thing for the guys who underperformed. So we'll see.
Yeah, I think I expect Varsho to have a much better season, and I think you can pretty much bank on
just pull some dingers.
Batting
baby.
Average, I think his batting average will be much higher than 220.
I'll take 235 with more like more power. You know, like just give it to me.
Yeah,
give me the juice.
That 2022 line, I'll take that.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
With Gold Glove defense, yeah, that's an all-star right there, baby. I love that.
Yep.
All right, Alejandro Kirk, Patrick Marsh.
Oh, my God. I can't believe we're here.
He's going to be relied upon quite heavily to start the season. He's been back to hitting dingers this spring, though, Patrick Marsh, just like Dalton Varsho and George Springer, hitting for a bit more power. Kirky's already got 3 homers and 35 plate appearances this spring and is hitting .364 with a 199 WRC plus. Our boy came out to play. He's got 5 doubles through the spring as well, so 7 extra base hits out of his 12 hits. He's got more extra base hits than singles. Give it to me. Great defensive catcher too, Patrick. He doesn't get a lot of credit, but he is in the 99th percentile for blocks above average and also in the 79th percentile for framing. We know both Blue Jays catchers struggle with caught stealing, but, I mean, who outside of Gabriel Moreno, who didn't struggle last year with the new rule changes. He's still in the best, like the 99th percentile for whiff rate, 98th for K percentage, 70th for walk rate. It's just for Kirky, he needs to get better at, again, putting more balls in play. Last year, he struggled with like exit velos, barrel rates. His numbers took a nosedive over 2022, but what he did not lose was the plate vision. If he can get back to, I mean, you look at his numbers, right? His average fell by 35 points. His on-base fell by 38 points. His slug, though, was down by just about 60 points. That was the big thing right there. A lack of balls in play, a 265 BABIP. He just was not hitting the ball well. One of the metrics that I've really been getting into on StatCast is the sweet spot percentage. His not very good. Like, it's 31%, 31st percentile or 31st percentile in 2022, went down to 23rd. But if you look at the hard hit rates and the barrels, those are the big numbers that dipped. Hard hit went from 78th to 33rd last year. So he just was not hitting the ball well at all, not squaring it up. And I think if he can get anywhere close to that, he'll be like more than fine offensively. So I'm looking forward to a rebound year two. Again, another guy we're looking forward to a rebound year from is a theme here this season.
Yep. His May and June last year were really 2 months to forget. I think they had a dramatic impact on his confidence, but also you can see it in his performance.
Yep.
He is not ever going to steal a base. he's already down like at least 30 pounds, I think.
He's lost a lot of weight, yeah. And you make a great point about the like the second half stats, right? I mean, the guy went from a 621 OPS in the first half to a 775. So he did finish very strong. Got back to what he was doing well.
But the first half of the year was tough to watch.
Yeah.
It's
tough to recover from a bad start stats wise, which is why we do have splits and break things down, because it's not how you start, it's how you finish in a lot of cases. And based on the fact that he finished well, it bodes well for me that he has carried over that progress into the spring.
Yeah.
It leads me to believe that he'll have a much better season than last year.
I think he'll hit better than 250.
Yeah, I agree.
And then if he hits better than 250, his OBP should be around...
look at his 2022 stat line, right? It's 285, probably, 372, 415.
I think we'll actually see something... around, if not slightly better than 2022.
Really,
I don't think his average will be 285, yeah, but I think his slug and OBP will be
close to there.
Very close. I think sure. I expect him to be somewhere between 725 and 775 for an OPS.
Yeah.
Like, that's pretty reasonable. He is good.
He's going to walk as much catcher. As he strikes out. He's going to get on base. It's just a matter of, can he also hit his way on base this year too? Because last year he didn't do that enough.
I mean, if he can get it together, and you know, he was there day one. He reported immediately to camp. There was no delay. I'm not saying we don't have to talk about all that other shit from last year. I'm moving on. He'll be catcher exclusive, I think. I don't think he'll see even a moment at DH this year.
Maybe one or two games. Like, that's probably a good thing, you know? Like, you'll keep him fresh. That helps. Sometimes with catchers, less is more. So
they're rolling the dice on a Kirk improvement. That's why they dealt Moreno in the first place.
Yeah.
They trust their two catchers that they've had for a number of years. Kirk is 25 years old, so he's the same age as Bo, same age as Vladdy, same age as Manoa.
He's actually younger than those guys, yeah. But
yeah,
in terms of days, but yeah.
But I mean, he did the right thing in the offseason. He came into camp in much better shape, and he has my absolute full confidence. I think hitting 15 home runs and 400 PAs. I think I'll have more PAs than that, and I'll take the over on home runs.
Yeah, he's under team control for the next three seasons as well, 24, 25, 26.
I think our boy is back.
Yeah, a guy who is not under team control beyond this season is Danny Jansen, Patrick.
I don't want to talk about it.
Pending free agent. Obviously is hurt again right now with the hand injury that we talked about at the top of the show, but is a guy who should bounce back from that relatively quickly by the sounds of it. You just worry about hand injuries at the beginning of the season. Will it kind of sap the power from his bat?
No.
I hope not, because Danny Bonds has been on a mission when healthy over the last two seasons. And about 549 plate appearances, he's got 32 home runs over the last 2 years, and was worth 2.5 0 F WAR in only 300 plate appearances last year.
That's insane.
2.6 the year before and 248 plate appearances. Like, when healthy, Danny Jansen is one of the best hitters on this team in terms of his power.
He's one of the best catchers in baseball.
Yeah, offensively for sure.
When he's healthy, yeah.
Defensively, took a bit of a step back.
Yeah, but I think it's that helps.
That's also the injuries playing. Yeah, a lot of like hats along with the hand injuries. He's suffered from some hamstring injuries the last couple of seasons as well. So I mean, it's just catchers get beat the shit. Like they are like used and abused by these teams with like balls in the dirt, taking foul balls off the legs, like whatever it is. Like they get beat up. So it's no surprise that like a guy going through some injury concerns the last couple of years is also going to suffer on defense, but he hasn't let it affect his bat. He hasn't let it affect the way he calls games or how he receives the baseball. Like pitchers still love throwing to him. He's very smart behind the plate, does a lot of great things in terms of his game calling, especially with working with younger pitchers. But I mean, yeah, he'll be back. I'm going to say mid-April. He's going to do a quick stint on the IL and then be back maybe for the home opener, essentially, sometime in that time frame. And, yeah, I'd expect similar offensive numbers. We talked about it with Springer, with Varsho. Like, those guys are pull hitters. Danny Jansen's been a pull hitter his entire life. He's never stopped being a pull hitter. He just pulls the baseball, like, heavy, heavy pull. And it's led to a lot of success for him. I mean, his pull percentage for his career is 52%. Last year was 55. Like, he knows what he does well, and he just never gotten away from it.
Yeah, he knows who he is.
We love Daniel Jansen on this podcast.
We know who he is at this point. We know who he is as a hitter. He knows who he is, and he's leaning into it. Last year, he saw a pretty significant drop in his average, but I'm not concerned. Let's lock him down for at least another 5 seasons. I don't see it. They would be stupid.
Yeah, especially with no like highly touted catching prospects in the system. This team doesn't have Adley Rutschman coming up. Like they need a guy like Danny Jansen, unless they're planning to go and sign somebody who we don't know about. But it's like I would be shocked if Danny Jansen is not a member of this team going forward after 2024.
I would be devastated. It would be devastating.
Yeah, I would rather. No, I'm not gonna. I was gonna say I'd rather Vladdy walk than not have Danny Jansen.
don't put that in the universe.
But hey, that's the main bats. These are the guys who we classify as, you know, near everyday players. Obviously, Kirk and Jano are going to split time at catcher when they're both healthy. You'll likely see the guy who is potentially hitting a little bit better, getting a bit more play time, but these guys are both terrific catchers in terms of defense and their ability to call games and work with this pitching staff. So they're going to get nearly identical playing time when both are around. We'll get to the bench guys here in our next episode. We're going to be releasing these pretty rapid fire, so that everyone can listen to these before the season opener on Thursday. So stay tuned. There'll be an episode basically every day for the next few days here. And yeah, we'll be coming at you really rapid fire. But for Patrick out in Halifax, I am Justin here in Saskatoon. And we'll talk to you on the bench episode.